You're listening to the Heroes Podcast Network.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Red Shirts and Runabouts. This is episode 85. I am Derek, your regular host, and I have back with me our recurring host, Ray.
Hi.
Hi, Ray.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Good. Well, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Ray is here to close out a big segment that we have been doing over the last 7 months, which is prepping for Picard.
Of course.
Ray and I kicked this thing off way back on episode 72, where we went through my list of the top 20 quintessential Picard episodes, and then followed that up with actually going through the episodes. If you've been listening, you know the format shifted a bit. Greg joined me for some, Ray joined me for some, and here we are now, episode 85, ready to finish up prepping for Picard, really kind of just in time. And it seems fitting. Greg, unfortunately, is under the weather, so it was kind of fitting that Ray started this with me, and now you get to end it with me.
I do. I'm actually pretty excited about that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
it's because I kind of like you. Don't tell anyone.
Don't tell anybody. Okay. all right. So here's the plan for today. We have two-parters, so to speak, to talk about. Both season 7, we have episodes 4 and 5, which are Gambit, parts 1 and 2. And then we have the finale, All Good Things, which is technically episodes 25 and 26. So that's what we're going to be doing here. Next week, we will return and take care of all of the short treks that we haven't gotten to, which include the two animated ones, as well as the new one that comes out this week. So you can stay tuned for that. And then we have one episode left before Star Trek Picard starts, which is crazy to think about that it's actually, it was even delayed and it still feels like it showed up pretty quick. So, all right, we will go ahead and kick things off. So Gambit is the first episode we're going to talk about. Ray, what are your initial thoughts on Gambit?
This was really fun. I liked the suspense aspect of it. It did keep me in the dark, and I was pretty curious how it was all going to unfold. This was like, I guess, like an action mystery. It was really...
espionage.
Yeah, it was. No, it was
not quite, but...
I mean, it wasn't... it's still Trek at the heart of everything. So, you know, it's still about diplomacy and the Federation and everything. But, you know, it's about as action-y as Trek comes at times. So I thought it was a wonderful Riker episode. Like, I would have put this more towards Riker than Picard. Picard's, like, not even in most of the first episode.
Because he's dead. But he's not, of course. Yeah, it's kind of funny. This is not the first episode that we've talked about where it's kind of a Riker episode, but important stuff happens to Picard that you can't ignore.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny when you think about it like that. You know, the best of both worlds can be looked at as a big Riker episode as well, because he ends up having to take command of the Enterprise and fire on his previous captain.
And I always feel that Measure of a Man is this wonderful triad between Riker, Picard, and Data.
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely a Riker heavy episode. I think you're totally right. So, okay. So let's do this. So Gambit, of course, we start off with kind of a cool bit where the main crew is in like civilian clothing. They're out of uniform and they're looking for somebody. And of course, I mean, we figure out it's Picard pretty quickly.
Pretty quickly, yeah.
You know, but they, I like the ruse that he...
all of them are fantastic. Deanna flirting with the bartender, the... Riker and Crusher sibling relationship, and Picard had impregnated Crusher. Like, I love all of that.
It's really cute. Like, I think one of the real positives of season seven, even though there's a few episodes that maybe aren't the best, but the dynamics between the main cast is so comfortable and fun by that point in the series that you can really see where the movie versions of them came from.
Yeah.
You know, because if you're a person who just watched the movies and then somebody showed you like the first couple of seasons of TNG, they're like completely different characters.
Oh, yeah.
But by season seven, they've kind of hit that mark. They've kind of become who they are going to be. So I like that. But,
well, 7 years ago, were you the same person? Did your writers have a consistent plan?
Oh, my writers have no plan. It's like Lost over here.
Oh, yeah. It's true. I come across smoke monsters on a daily basis.
All the time. All the time. So it turns out, though, that they go after these people that killed Picard, and we end up in a shootout on an alien planet.
Yeah.
And Riker gets taken hostage. Of course, it's a little funny because he just had the conversation with Data about how a captain's not supposed to go down on an away mission. It's like an ongoing thing in TNG, which is a fun callback to the original series where it was always the captain and the first officer going down.
And your medical officer, like, what the hell? He's not an adventurer. Like, damn it, Jim.
And I it's just funny how like TNG's like, all right, so we're obviously not going to do that anymore. But Riker does here, and he of course gets captured, which is hilarious. But that's when we really find out what this episode is. We find out that Picard is alive.
Mm-hmm.
He's playing a character of sorts named Galen, who, for those of you who may or may not remember, is the name of the person he is in the Inner Light, which is pretty cool. But Anyway, so there's a mercenary ship. They're all controlled by these chips in their necks. Baran is the captain who, I guess, murdered the previous captain. It's very Klingon. That's how you become captain, is murdering the captain.
That's how pirates did it, too.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah.
Klingons are very much like pirates, I guess, from that standpoint. Because if you want to be a captain on the Klingon ship, you got to kill your captain. So that's how it goes. But anyway, so what did you think of that, the microchips and like just kind of the setup of Baran's ship, how that kind of came to be?
Okay, so he briefly says that it's connected to your nervous system, which means that at some point someone did surgery on these people and everybody was compliant for it. Everybody was good. And undercover Vulcan was fine with this. Like that, not all of them could have been sedated for it. Like, did he, and they stuck around? Like, I mean, I feel like for all these people to undergo this procedure, it couldn't have all been under the same situation and circumstances as Riker. Like, so some people were doing it voluntarily, and then I don't get it. I would have feel like somebody would have protested that. Also, by the end of the episode, by the end of episode two, you can tell that some of these scenes were filmed like kind of in order because the prosthetic was coming off of Picard and Robin Curtis.
I didn't notice that, but that's pretty funny. Yeah, I mean, you make an interesting point, though, because Riker, of course, was unconscious, so that's right. Easy. But for the rest of them, we don't even know who's performing the procedure.
Right. Like, is Braun doing it?
We don't see any type of medical bay. Mm-mm. We don't see a doctor or anybody who even claims to really have any medical knowledge.
Right.
So it is an interesting question, though. I think it was probably, well, you're right from the standpoint that they agree, some of them at least had to agree to it. I'm not sure it would be voluntary. I think it was more of a do it or die kind of thing.
So coerced consent, right. It's still, you know, it's not like complete consent or anything. We all know that. But still, that part baffled me. I wanted to know more about that. Like, where is this happening? How many of those does he have? Does he just have an unlimited supply? Can his replicator just make those? Like, because that was a very interesting kind of MacGuffin
Yeah.
To a certain degree that they never actually explain, but they don't keep it in the dark. You know, it's not like the Maltese Falcon or the briefcase with the light bulb in it from Pulp Fiction. So it was just a writer convenience that I wanted to know more of. Usually they spend more time with their Trekno babble.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair. The crew seemed pretty small, right? It was like less than a dozen people, so maybe he had 20 of them or something.
Maybe. I don't know.
I mean, it does come back. It does come back, though, and basically like define how the episode ends because, you know, skipping ahead a bit, Picard switches the transponder codes or whatever the line is, so that way Baran sets off his own.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. So I guess maybe that's part of the point then, is the person who did it to them all, to most of them anyway, was the previous captain or something like that. I don't know. It's a little confusing because Baran makes it sound like
he was the one who implemented it. And
well, no, he says that the original captain, his predecessor, created it, invented it.
Got it.
He does say that. But the question that I would have then is, how does Baran kill his captain with those things implanted?
Yeah.
You know, and then why wouldn't he take it out? Because, I mean, Crusher has no problem doing it.
Right. She's able to get it out of both Riker and Picard. But again, they don't focus on it. We just see them walking through the hallway.
Yeah. So that's a little weird. But so the main point of the episode is everyone has to kind of keep these ruses going, right?
Picard is
Galen and Riker is a kind of renegade officer. Data's the captain and he's incredible. Of course, Data's very analytical and has to try and anticipate these more, you know, unique mission adjustments rather than just following orders. So it gives Data a chance to really show what he can do.
And the Romulan pretending... Or the Vulcan pretending to be a Romulan, but she's also pretending to be an operative. And yeah, like, so many covers.
So many. And so that's Talera, and she's played by Robin Curtis, who played Savick.
And she says her real name's T'Pol.
Yeah, which is weird. So this episode actually has like two total coincidences in it, because there's also Admiral Chakotay, who people wanted to know if he was related to Commander Chakotay that we get in Voyager. And it's just coincidental.
That one's more likely than, you know, Enterprise. I bet you anything a writer was just watching TNG was like, that's a good name. Let's use it.
But the Robin Curtis thing is kind of funny because we were watching this and it had been a while since I had watched Gambit, so I couldn't remember some of it.
Well, I immediately asked if she was playing Savick.
Right. And I knew she wasn't playing Savick, right. But there was that point where I was like, she's really playing a very Vulcan Romulan because I had forgotten.
And then she says she is like no less than 20 seconds later. I made funny. You pause and we giggled.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. But she does a good job, and
she's wonderful.
That was really nice to see her again in a similar-ish role.
Yeah.
Well,
because I always found her version of Savick to be more of a Romulan, like Vulcan. Like, you know, it's not very Vulcan of her to have sex with a teenager.
she
totally boned a
it
teenager.
It is very logical for her to help Spock through Ponfar because it can kill him. So
not know how to masturbate? Like, just
doesn't work like that for Ponfar. It's not how it works. So you have that's the key. So there's only three ways out of Ponfar. You have sex, you have a fight to the death and win, or you die. Like those are the three ways out of it. And you know, we'll sit down and watch Amok Time at some point from the original series. So you can get all the details.
We have watched that.
Have we watched that one? Okay. That pretty much tells you all the important stuff. Until you get to Voyager, Tuvok has to deal with Ponfar a bit.
Right.
So, as does B'Elanna, which is interesting. I'm not going to tell you anymore. So this episode, the main reason that I put this episode on the list, because this is prepping for Picard, is twofold. One is the archaeology. Right? Because Picard is an archaeologist. We get this a lot. There's a lot of focus on it. It's why Captain's Holiday is on this list. The chase on our last episode, for example. Archaeology has always been very important to Picard. And so this is an example of that. This is, he's playing a character, but all that archaeology knowledge is just Picard's knowledge, right? So he can read Vulcan. He can even read ancient Vulcan and ancient Romulan and decipher the two, which is a really big deal, right? And so that's why, that's one of the, reason one. Reason two has to do with Picard's ability to be a covert operative, right? Because we don't get to see a lot of it in Chain of Command. In Chain of Command, they're doing like this secret agent mission with Crusher and Worf, but he gets captured, and that's really what that episode's about. This is the first time you ever get to see him do something undercover that more or less goes correctly.
I did want to say, you know, that part is a bit confusing to me because of his reputation. You know, I would figure that people would know his face, that he's a very popular man, and maybe not everybody, of course, but it's made to feel in the previous six seasons that his reputation precedes him and people just know him by face or by the last name. So,
yeah, I think that's a reasonable concern because it was also an issue in last week's episode. And of course, I'm drawing a blank now. I just lost it. It's just gone. The Indiana Jones-ish one.
Indiana Jones, the chase?
No, not Indiana Jones. The Die Hard one. The Die Hard in space.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I know what you're talking about. Yeah, sorry.
That one is very much like this in the Starship
where
Mine. Starship Mine.
That's he pretends he's Mott and...
Yeah, and like nobody, like none of the mercenaries know who he is. And right. I think it's a fair point, and I think it can sometimes be explained away. I think in Starship Mine, it makes zero sense because these mercenaries were specifically going after the Enterprise.
Right.
Right. And you would think that they would have familiarized themselves.
This one does make a bit more sense because none of them are associated with the Federation. They're not trying to attack the Enterprise. They're staying away from, you know, straight up Federation planets. They're more just like planets within systems and stuff. So it's more believable. But still.
Yeah, I agree with you. And there seemed to be like some explanations like their database was really limited because Picard makes that comment about how if he just had a few minutes with the Enterprise computer, you know, but you would think that a guy like Baran, who is doing illegal things and intelligently is very cautious of people,
right,
would try and run them through some type of database.
Right.
Before he just brings them onto his ship and his crew. But he doesn't, obviously. So, yeah, so, you know, there's a lot of back and forth between Picard and Riker, and this plays into the second reason why I put this on the list, is Picard being able to become this other person, this other character. And who Galen is, I think, is really, like, very specific and very important. The fact that he picks that name is a really big deal, because that is him, to an extent. To an extent, he's not lying about that.
No, he had a full life,
you know,
as Galen.
And in Lessons, you know, he talks about how he like really lived that life and feels that loss and had a wife and children and a grandchild. And
yep,
you know, so that's really interesting that would be the name that he goes with when he goes undercover.
This episode also speaks really well to Picard and Riker's friendship. There are so many times where they have to say, you know, horrible, mean things to each other, and they enact physical harm onto the other, that if they didn't have the trust in one another, this wouldn't have gone so well. If Data didn't have the trust in Picard and Riker, like, you couldn't do this episode season one.
No.
It wouldn't work because people wouldn't follow. And I think the next episode that we talk about kind of proves that, you know?
I think that's a very, very good point, because most of this episode is predicated on them trusting each other when they're doing outrageously illegal things.
Absolutely.
You know? You've got Riker demanding that a starbase shuts down its shields, and they actually Picard fires on that starbase. Picard fires on the Enterprise.
Yep.
You know, these things happen, and they're still able to trust each other. And I think it says a lot about Data, maybe even the more than Riker and Picard, because Data doesn't have his emotion chip yet.
No.
Right. He is still without that. And his grasp on those types of interactions is still not necessarily as good. And he has, you know, Worf breathing down his neck, wanting to just, you know, go in guns a-blazing, because that's Worf's style. And he has to tone that down and try and trust in Riker. Mm-hmm. You know, when Riker and Picard come on the ship and they're still, you know, kind of undercover, you know, and they have to shoot. I mean, they shoot Beverly and Worf in the shuttle bay, you know, and
they just have to be chill with it. Like, I'm not going to lie. Beverly, especially, like, Worf is head of security and, you know, he's just a very intense kind of guy. He's probably taken a shot or two, but like, how many times has Beverly been shot? Like, for God's sake, she's a doctor. Like, if I woke up from that, I'd be pissed.
That's fair. And I mean, they do go out of their way to show how like Worf's not necessarily the biggest Klingon.
Oh my gosh. That was hilarious.
I mean, you know, that dude's huge. And I'm sure they probably put him in boots too, but he's actually a very tall actor to begin with. But you know, but to your point, like, you know, there's a point where Picard punches Riker and then Riker punches Picard and Picard shoots Riker, you know, and it's all very intense and they play it really well. And I think you're right that the earlier this takes place, the less believable it is, to a point where it just couldn't exactly have worked.
And all the other characters on the ship, all the other main cast are equally as trusting. They're just not as forefront in this mm-hmm. episode. You know, Deanna saying that Riker's dead, it means she's playing along. She knows what to do to a small degree. And so everybody had a small part to play in this one, and they all did it because they love and trust each other, which, you know, like I said, it's just not, it has to be a season 7 episode.
And it comes off as one of my favorites because of that dynamic specifically. I don't think any of the other Star Trek shows, any of them, got to this point where their characters' chemistry worked so well together. Like, you had Kirk Spock Bones, right? And you had
the three of them were really good friends, but you hear all this other turmoil, like Nichelle Nichols and George Takei didn't really like Shatner and their relationship broke apart. So
yeah, I mean, in universe though.
Okay, that's fair too.
Yeah, like the characters, because it was rare that the original series got everybody together in something like this. And DS9 did a pretty good job of it at times, especially as the show progressed.
I noticed more episodes where the entire cast of DS9 appears in an episode. And TNG, like some of the episodes we've talked about for prepping for Picard, I've sat there and been like, where's Deanna? Where's Data? Where's Geordi?
They might have one scene or one line just to get their credit.
They're not in there at all or whatever.
But I don't think any of them really ever hit the stride of the chemistry that this crew hit in season 7.
It absolutely is due to the nature of their relationship behind the scenes. Yeah. Voyager, their cast has a really good relationship too, outside of work. But, you know, we see pictures on Instagram and Twitter of the TNG cast hanging out, like, not for promo events or anything, but, you know, because it's a Sunday and they can, and
they celebrate holidays together.
Exactly. They're family, you know. DS9 cast, they have working relationships. Some of them are closer than others.
Well, but some of them were married
and had a child and have to communicate now that they're broken up.
Yeah, so I mean, so that's the bulk of the episode and really why I wanted it on this list. There's not a whole lot else to really put in here. You know, Picard saves the day. They go down to Vulcan.
Okay, so I have to ask you then, if we're going to stop this one soon, how do you feel about the ending?
Which part?
The part about how peace beats the thing, the weapon, because At first I thought it was really lame. I thought it was super lame, like the love is the fifth dimension kind of crap from Inception. Or not Inception, I'm sorry, Interstellar. He has so many iMovies. But then as it goes on, I was like, this is the most Trek thing that has ever Trekked in all of Trek. Like, you know, just that's what they're hoping for, that diplomacy and peace wins out, that unity is the answer to everything. So I ended up feeling a bit better about it.
So I like it for a few different reasons. I think it's actually the only way that that weapon makes any sense. And what I mean by that is that thing has been missing for a couple thousand years, mm-hmm. right? And if it could just work on Vulcan telepathic abilities, why wouldn't somebody have invented another one? What's so special about this? You know, Vulcan science has progressed over the centuries, you know, so much. Why is this particular device made out of three stone metal spot, you know, pieces special? And it's not. That's the point. It wasn't dismantled because it was dangerous. It was dismantled because it was useless. Because
it stopped working.
Yeah. Right. And that's why there weren't any more, because they were useless. Because the idea is Vulcans have telepathic abilities, but they are fairly limited. And because of that, they needed something that could amplify mm-hmm. more than themselves. Right. And so that's why I think in universe, it's actually very consistent with what we know about Vulcans and even what we learn about Vulcans in Voyager and Enterprise later. And so that's totally fine with me. And it is like it is like the most Trek message imaginable. And it's a little funny that it's in this episode, because this is an episode that Gene Roddenberry probably would not have liked.
Right. It is super hyper violent and...
Well, it focuses on space pirates.
Yes.
And he doesn't like... He never liked the idea of space pirates. He didn't really want them to be a thing in Star Trek. And so this is one of those stories that I think could not really have been made while he was alive. And it's almost... It's kind of ironic that in the same episode as something he would have really hated is... really the message he was trying to get across the entire time.
Right.
Which is nice, which, you know, could either have been done on purpose to contrast the two, or maybe is just, you know, in honor of him as the whole point of it all.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really cool.
One final thing. How long do you think Data made Riker stay in the brig? I truly believe he took him down there and made him stay for a little bit.
I'm not convinced he made it to the brig because he's got his comm badge and can just tap it and call somebody, you know. But it is a great moment that I'm glad you brought up when the three of them are kind of joking in the corridor and Data doesn't get that it's a joke.
Well, again, that is a progression of Picard's character. Picard's character in season one, when it's sleep, he'd go right back to the bridge. And now he's like, you know what? It's time for a nap.
Well, think of all he's been through. Exactly. You know? He's been a Borg. He's been tortured by the Cardassians. Mm-hmm. You know, he was almost killed on his own ship during the sweep in Starship Mines. Right. He almost lost a lover. And just so many right. different things.
He lost an entire family. He deserves a nap, guys.
The guy just needs a nap. There are a couple of things that we didn't mention that really have nothing to do with Picard, but one piece of technology in this episode that I really like and was borrowed later by Futurama is the transporter gun. Because it's such a brilliant concept. Like, why wouldn't that be a thing? Could you imagine how easy it would be when you're trying to like beam stuff up to a ship to just point and click, you know, rather than have to provide coordinates and things like that? I love that. I thought that was a super cool tech invention that we really, to my memory, never see again.
They do that. They come up with all these really amazing things that they, you know, immediately drop for one reason or another. And I think it's because some of them are just a little too convenient. I mean, we're all still trying to figure out how the spore drive is gonna end up going away.
Right. Yeah, that's a fair point too. All right, well, are there any more thoughts on Gambit before we take a break?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we will be talking about the finale of Star Trek The Next Generation, All Good Things.
Recently on the Heroes Podcast Network, Echo Station.
Well, what's the main planet that Endor, the forest moon of Endor? It's a moon. So there's a major planet, obviously, that it...
Is the forest moon of Endor? Is Endor the actual planet then?
See, isn't that confusing? Yes. Is it the forest moon of the planet Endor, or is it the forest moon called Endor?
Kaiju Curry House.
It got to the point where he started climbing the Empire State Building, and my mom is like, he's not gonna die, is he?
Oh no.
My mom doesn't know shit about these films, but anyways, it was just like, Mom, this doesn't end well for Kong. And she's just like, I can't watch the rest of this. Turn it off. I'm like, you can't get to this point in Peter Jackson's King Kong 2 hours and like whatever many minutes later and not watch the end.
screen heroes.
The nipples okay, just were confusing to me because they just make no sense.
That is our clip, by the way.
But I mean, male nipples are kind of confusing anyway. So
right? Like, well, they serve true. Zero that's purpose. True.
Do you think that was the point he was trying to make?
It's a much deeper message. Yes.
Is Batman and Robin a heavily an allegory, social allegory?
Yeah.
Subscribe today at heroespodcast.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Spreaker, Podcast Addict, and more.
Okay, and we're back. So, all good things. This episode, of course, is a big deal for so many reasons. The finale of the show is incredibly ambitious. It directly focuses on Picard, and it is my favorite episode of Star Trek. Not just TNG, but of Star Trek. And this was your first time seeing this episode, and I have been dying to show it to you for a very long time, and I thought this was the best opportunity to do it. So, all good things, of course. If you haven't seen it, you should just stop listening right now and go watch it and then come back. But I'm going to assume that you've seen it. So let's move on. Ray.
Yes.
What are your initial thoughts on all good things?
Oh, my God. So I was so frustrated watching it, trying to figure everything out. I was so frustrated. But I think that is just one of the best payoffs I've ever seen. And like when we finished, I just kind of like exclaimed, I yelled, I shouted because I was so happy with everything. Like that's the way you do a series finale. And you thought I was being sarcastic. You thought I was like being a jerk about things.
Not being a jerk. I thought you may have been exaggerating yourself a little bit because you knew how much I liked the episode and you didn't want to hurt my feelings.
Oh, that's sweet that you think I'm like that, but you know I'm more callous. No, I truly thought it was just amazing. It was brilliant writing. It was well thought out. You know, they had been thinking about this for years. So I think they really pulled it off.
It's a big deal, this episode. So for those who don't know, they were writing this and Generations at the same time. The same people.
One is better than the other.
Brandon Braga and Denise Crosby. Wow. Brandon Braga and Michael D. Moore were writing this at the same time. And I think that Generations maybe took a hit because of that, because I personally feel like their emphasis and their focus was on closing out the show rather than kicking off the movies. And I think that that's fine. But I do think that doing them both at the same time meant that Generations maybe took a hit. This episode, of course, focuses on Picard and kind of two different fronts, Picard and Q and Picard and his crew. And to your point earlier when we were talking about Gambit, most of this episode is reliant on his people trusting him.
Absolutely.
And not just trusting him, but respecting him enough to go and do crazy dangerous things, even if there's no evidence that he is being reasonable or not senile. You know, they talk about his Arimotic syndrome, especially in the future timeline, and this could all be in his head. He's not even in Starfleet anymore, and Geordi's not isn't in Starfleet anymore. Data's not in Starfleet anymore, and you know, Worf is not in Starfleet anymore. And they have to kind of come to together like this ragtag team to help Picard do what he needs to do. It's hard to kind of know where to start on this one. The whole reason this is on the list, aside from closing out the series and some of these relationships, it focuses on Picard's mentality, his mental strength and fortitude, and his unwillingness to concede. You know, because obviously in the present timeline, which is the season 7 time period, you know, he's going to have the easiest time. He's captain of the flagship of the Federation. He's got his current crew around him. They love him. They trust him. And he has a lot of clout and power that he can wield. In the past timeline, which takes place just before Encounter at Farpoint, which is the pilot, they barely know him. Yes, he's the captain of the Enterprise, but he has no first officer. Riker's not there yet. You know, Tasha doesn't know him. Worf doesn't know him. None of them know him at all. They have no reason to trust him. He's just their new captain, right? And so they want to follow orders, of course, because they're good officers. But there's limits to their patience. There's limits to their understanding and how much risk that they want to put themselves in. And then you move to the future timeline, which is very important for prepping for Picard specifically, because Star Trek Picard, the show, takes place when this timeline takes place. So that this is the age we're going to be seeing these characters. And there's already differences that we know of.
Which they explained in the episode itself.
They did.
So
do you think that was a smart kind of throwaway kind of explanation?
I think it was mostly there for hope, to be honest, because nobody likes the possibility that everything's already set in stone and your choices have no effect. So we all prefer free will over like a we prefer manifest destiny over like destiny.
Predetermined.
Exactly. Yeah. So I don't think they knew that the future was going to hold a sequel show, but I'm really glad that they threw that line in anyway because of how things have ended up.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's a big deal. We have these characters where you've got – so Deanna's dead. Worf and Riker are
– hate each other.
Not speaking at all. Picard and Beverly did get married, but they got divorced. So the Picard-Bev shippers out there kind of got some of what they wanted very briefly.
Which is upsetting because they totally kiss at the beginning of the episode. And I was like, yes.
You know, and it's kind of rough. And then you have Picard's aromatic syndrome and it's advanced, you know, which is even more intense, of course. And you know, it's a syndrome that would be similar to something like Alzheimer's or dementia, where you start to lose your memories and a sense of reality. And I mean, aside from that kind of being almost anybody's worst nightmare, I would imagine that it's got to be Picard's, a man who has always been in control. It's we talked about this a bit with The Best of Both Worlds, the fact that he lost his control, right? That's a very big deal to him. And this is that happening again, just in a very different way. So Q, let's talk Q. Let's talk John DeLancey, who is one of my favorite actors on the planet, and Q is one of my favorite characters in all of Star Trek. The book ending that this episode does very, very intentionally brings back Q. What do you think about the relationship between Picard and Q, specifically in this episode? What he did, how it was set up, how it kind of plays out. What do you think?
Okay, so I have to ask a few questions.
Do it.
Are all the Q like him?
What do you mean? They all have his abilities.
Right. His personality, you know, he is sitting here and he is indirectly and directly responsible for what is going on. Yet he keeps telling Picard to expand his mind and how he's so primitive and brutal and savage, how humans are just so beneath him. And yet he is playing with them as if they're toys. He's a child. Like he is introducing us to the Borg. Like he puts humanity and Picard in danger's way, and he says that it's for like a lesson to be learned or the greater good, or when if he didn't interfere at all, nothing would happen.
Well, that's not the case in the finale.
So I'm just asking, like, is the entire race of the Q
no
interfering assholes?
They're not all like that. No. Okay. Some are bigger troublemakers than others. They're not supposed to interfere. They're not supposed to really interact.
Then why does he do it so much?
Because,
like, what's
so here's the here so you don't know this yet because you haven't watched all of Voyager, but the Q are stagnated. The Q have stopped evolving. They've stopped growing because they are omnipotent, all-powerful creatures. They know everything in all time and space, and they can do whatever they want, and they've become sedentary because of it. Q, our Q, isn't like that. He still finds things to occupy himself, things to do, things that are outside of the rules of the Q, and he gets in trouble from time to time.
Okay.
But what you'll see in Voyager when we get around to that is that he is willing to go the extra mile to make things different, to change, to continue that change, because that's the only constant, right, in life is change. Right? That's supposed to be the saying. But the Q can't change. If you know everything and can do anything, how can you change? How can you grow? How can you evolve?
Right.
Right? There's nothing for you to learn. You've learned it all already. You know it all. And so Q's not like that. Q is a little bit different. And he finds humanoids very fascinating, and Picard in particular, because the Q were like us originally. And he kind of sees themselves in Picard, at least the best of the Q in Picard. And, you know, he comes along and he causes mischief and he plays around and has a good time because he can. And he is a little bored and he likes a challenge. And the truth is that Picard gives him a challenge. You know, Q sets up certain rules, right? There's always rules to the game.
Okay.
Right? But Q is much more like Dr. Cox in Scrubs, where he doesn't really want anybody to know that he's really actually a nice guy. So he just purposefully does the wrong thing to keep that allure, right? To keep him seeming like that. And in this case, this is showing how far his relationship with Picard has come, right? We had Tapestry, where Q gave Picard an opportunity to prove who he is, right? And that Q didn't have to do that. Q could have let Picard die or live and never know the difference, right? But instead, he intervened and gave Picard an opportunity that I think many of us would jump at, which is to undo what something we believed was a mistake.
Okay.
Right? You know, and that story, I think, is important to a lot of people. I mean, it hit me really hard because, as just an example, I was academically dismissed from college after my freshman year. And there are many, many times where I thought, well, what if I could do it differently? What if I could go back and go to class and be the good student that I was and do it the right way? But to the point of Tapestry and the point that Q was trying to make, you are the decisions that you made. And who I am today, where I am today, who I'm with today is predicated on those decisions.
And I, just because you aired your dirty laundry, I feel like I should.
If you don't have to.
Well, it's just, you know, I have often said to you, I wish I would have known you when I was younger, that I believe you and I would have gotten along at just about any age if we had been, you know, playmates next door to each other, or, you know, high school sweethearts instead of meeting in our late 20s, then, you know, I just believe you and I could have had like a long friendship throughout the years. And, you know, you always say to me, but we have each other now and it might not have worked then. And I believe you and everything, but I still made quite a few romantic mistakes along the way that I wish I could erase.
So the point is that Q has an interest in Picard and he wants Picard to succeed.
Okay.
He just doesn't necessarily go about it in the best way.
Right.
And so in all good things, we have a situation where we have this paradox, and paradoxes are very complicated, and this one is no exception. Picard creates this anomaly himself in the future, and right. Q knows that that's going to happen, and Q doesn't want that to happen because he doesn't want Picard to not exist. He doesn't want humanity to not exist. What fun is that, right? All the fun that Q's had, what would that be like if we weren't around? And so Q is there to push Picard and to help him from himself. which I think is kind of cool.
Fair enough.
So, I don't know. Do you have any other thoughts on that? I feel like I've talked a lot.
No, you're right. If Q hadn't interrupted Picard so much and done the time shift and everything, do you think the anomaly still would have happened?
Well, that's the paradox. The paradox is that Picard is doing it in the future. And the only way to stop it is for him to work with himself to stop it. Right? And he can't do that without Q's help.
Right.
And so that's the key. And that's the paradox, right? The paradox is that it has to happen for it not to happen.
Yeah, that's fair.
Right? That's where it gets really complicated.
It is. It's very complicated. Time travel-y stuff is always complicated, and it's not always, well-written or well-done, and there's always holes you could poke into time travel if you wanted to.
Yeah, this episode does, I think, a better job than most things to get around all of it.
I agree.
You know, the three timelines are totally segregated from each other. They don't actually impact each other, which is Q's doing, I assume. You know, and that kind of gets rid of any time travel-y, timey-wimey issues. So let's talk about the other relationships with the characters, specifically the future timeline. How did you feel about who the characters had become and how they interacted with each other?
Well, I think to do that, we have to talk about the present timeline a bit. I asked you about this, like, if hints of Deanna and Worf were laid out in other parts of season 7, and you said not really. So we're just supposed to believe that this romance between them developed over the last couple of weeks or whatever, days or something?
I mean, I think it's a little more complicated than that, because Riker and Deanna don't get back together. And it's been 7 years since they've been on the ship together, let alone how long they had been apart prior to that.
Right.
And so I think it was just a matter of Deanna moving on because somebody else was interested. Right. And so this is something that may have been in the background a little bit more than we saw, or really did just develop over the course of a few weeks or months, you know, between this episode and the one before it.
Right.
There's not really a good way to know, but I don't know that's really much of a problem for me.
It's not a problem for me. Because I jumped around. I watched your prepping for Picard list. I did not watch a lot in between. Like, I requested some if the thumbnail looked really cool when we were streaming. But I was just asking to be better informed. Like, is this something they've been building to?
Not really, no.
Then I honestly don't believe it was worth a 20-year-long feud.
Well, it's not. I think maybe it's oversimplifying it a bit, because the idea here is that Riker is not going to be mad at Deanna, but he is going to be mad at Worf, right? And I think the two of their personalities together could easily create a rift where they just stop talking to each other.
Well, for sure. And I think a lot of people make that choice. We choose to be mad at the other person instead of being mad at our partner or former partner or interest or whatever.
But I think that it's a normal relationship thing. I think there's lots of people out there who stopped being friends with somebody because of something exactly like this. I think that's probably pretty common.
Yeah.
And I think that it takes special people to not let that happen. And I think that part of what happens later in the movies is informed by this, right? Because, well, Worf leaves and ends up on Deep Space Nine, and that gives Deanna and Riker an opportunity. And I think Riker, knowing that this was happening, may have been like the kick in the pants that he needed to really try and push forward with them.
Yeah.
You know, I guess we don't really get to know that, because it doesn't really happen until Insurrection. Right. So they get back together in Insurrection and they're married to Nemesis. And so there's not a whole lot of character build, which is part of why I'm a big believer that this belongs on TV more than it does on the big screen. But, you know, in the old way of television, there wasn't a lot of that continuing storytelling.
Okay, so what do you think TNG could have benefited from by airing now in the age of serialized episodes and binging and shortened seasons and stuff?
The serialized thing is the biggest piece, because they tried to do little things, you know, like Picard's Borg stuff and right. the stuff with the inner light and things of that nature, but they couldn't really continue with it. So exploring the aftermath of you know, his torture with the Cardassians, or exploring the aftermath of being Locutus more than just the episode family, I think could have been really interesting. You know, having these relationships build could have been cool. There weren't really a lot of romances because you couldn't really keep that going week to week. You had to kind of start things fresh. And the only character that really had consistent growth was Data. And, you know, I think it really could have gained from that. But I think the main reason that they do the relationship between Worf, Deanna, and Riker the way they do in the finale and All Good Things actually has more to do with filming than anything else. Because if you notice in the other timelines, there's always somebody swapped out.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think that that becomes part of that conversation. You know, they remove Deanna from the future, but then they remove, you know, they don't have Riker in the past, right? Because he wasn't on the ship. And it was almost a way of balancing that out, maybe. Just trying to think.
That's fair.
You know, if maybe that's that was part of it.
Well, the likelihood that all seven of them would still be alive 25 years later is, with the kind of feel that they're in, they all have had brushes with death in the past, you know, it's probably less likely, especially as obviously Crusher and Riker and Picard move up within mm-hmm. Starfleet.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be interested to know more about how she died.
You know, I agree.
Was it a mission or a battle, or was it a disease or whatever? We don't get to know, I guess. But so, okay, other stuff.
I absolutely adore that Geordi is a family man novelist. I love that Data is a professor at Cambridge. I love that Picard and Crusher got together. I was like, everything about me was just begging to have Wesley back. As so, like, Picard could be his stepdaddy or something. Like, like, oh my god, if Wesley doesn't appear in the Picard show at all, I'm gonna be so upset, because Will Wheaton is just a treasure, and that character gets a bad rap. So
that's fair. By the way, just a quick plug for Will Wheaton. He did the new audio for the audiobook of The Martian.
Yeah.
So if you've never heard The Martian or want to hear it again, you can get his version out now. And I'm just going to plug that because that's cool. Anyway.
We're not being paid.
We're not. But I want to go get that and listen to it because I think that would be fun.
You know, you don't have to go get audio files anymore. You can just immediately download them.
But my phone is not, like, I'm not holding it right now, so I have to get my phone and then go download the thing.
You're so adorable.
All right, so moving on to other stuff then. So, you know, the main kind of crux of the episode is getting the crews on board to believe Picard. And for Picard to realize that he has to work with himself, the different versions of himself, essentially, to complete this mission. So there's a lot of back and forth. They're shifting through the time periods faster and faster.
God, the cuts were so good.
Yeah.
The cuts were really well done. I kept looking for it, and they did it very smartly. They would wait for Picard to have his eyes closed or something, and then when he opened them up, it was a different time period. Like, they just, it's so well done. Ugh.
At any point, did you find it confusing?
No.
Okay. That's
the
good.
Uniforms, the outfits, and the age makeup that they did on him was pretty easy to follow.
I want to talk about that for a moment.
The age makeup was better on some people than it was on others.
That's not what I was going to go towards. I was going to talk about the uniforms and the bridge. So, you know, TNG got new uniforms in season 3. The old uniforms are still used by like extras in the background and stuff like that. But the bridge also got some minor updates over the years. And it is just, it's super cool what that detail is like. They did such a good job, like putting O'Brien in the correct color, putting Worf in the correct color, having Tasha back, you know, like,
Deanna in the skirt.
But bringing Denise Crosby back, I think was a really big deal because, you know, she quit the show. And she's spoken about this many, many times.
And she expressed regret over it.
And so they kept kind of trying to find ways to bring her back. And they did in Yesterday's Enterprise. And then she's back as her half-Romulan daughter, Sela. And, you know, it's bringing her back for the finale, I think, is very important. Because they didn't have to.
No.
They could have done something different, but they didn't. They stayed true to the show and its own history and brought her back in a way that let her close out the series with everybody else, which I think is really cool. I thought that was just really neat from a real-world perspective, along with just all those little details of changing the paneling on the bridge and adding the Rise Up and the Future Enterprise, which I've always said, and you finally got to really see it in action. The Future Enterprise, which is called the Dreadnought on Star Trek Online, is my favorite Enterprise.
It looked really cool.
It's always been my favorite since the first time I saw it. And it's a shame that's all you ever really get to see of it in any canon stuff. It is in the video game, Star Trek Online, which is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so... I love those details. The going back and forth was really cool. You do get to see in the future, Geordi has robotic eyes, cybernetic eyes, instead of the visor, which is really neat because he gets like the legit ones in First Contact.
Yes.
So you actually get to see that one come to be, which I thought was really cool. The one thing that's kind of unclear about Data is he makes a comment about how his assistant makes him laugh. And I wonder if that was just
I thought it was like a snooty affectation that right. he was developing, like, oh, but she makes me laugh. Exactly. How droll.
Right. Like, was he just saying it?
Yeah.
Or was this like a little seed of him getting his emotion chip at some point?
It easily could have been, truly believed it was more of him stepping into the new role. You know, he's not second officer. He's not helmsman. He's professor.
Professor Data. So there's a lot of cool things in here that I also think are really important for the Picard show itself. You get the vineyard. You know, Picard is back on the Picard wine vineyard. And so obviously it was a 1994 TV show budget versus modern day streaming service budget. But, you know, he had the vineyard and he's working the vines and things like that. And I think it's really interesting that we're going to get to see that again in this new future.
Yeah.
And a lot has changed. You know, it appears certainly that Riker's no longer in Starfleet. You know, he's got children with Deanna, who's alive. There's no signs of Picard having aromatic syndrome, or at least not very advanced.
So they're not saying anything about that, and they're not showing if he shares the house with anyone very specifically. I think, you know, they're doing that for a reason. I'm not convinced that he lives alone just with a dog, but
I was pretty convinced of that.
Okay.
I think the shot of him getting out of bed when the dog wakes him up, when number one wakes him up, I think he looks pretty alone.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong, if somehow it turns out that Beverly is in this in some capacity, that would be lovely.
Wouldn't you like be super surprised that they've hidden Gates McFadden this whole time?
I would. And I mean, honestly, I'm kind of shocked they've revealed as much as they've had. I mean, showing that Brent Spiner shows up, showing that Jerry Ryan shows up, those are big reveals. And some.
Well, they're also doing press tours, you know. Marina Sirtis and Jonathan Frakes aren't.
Right. And they still showed them, though, which I think is really interesting because they kept talking about how there weren't going to be a lot of these TNG little like nods or anything like that until future seasons, if there were any. And we're already going to have at least 3 returning actors plus Jerry Ryan from Voyager. So that's pretty interesting. But But anyway, so for all good things, you know, Picard ends up back in the court that we started at. You know,
that was the confusing part.
Oh,
because when he started having the visions of the citizens, yeah, that was confusing. Because, like, straight up, they just show two that are just very differently shaped and everything. And I was like, oh my God, is this The Hills Have Eyes? This looks ridiculous.
You have to think back to that premiere, right? To the pilot. And for me, I think it's the best bookend of any series I've ever watched.
Yeah, it's pretty creative. But honestly, when I think about that premiere, I don't remember the background citizens in front of the trial. I remember like Tasha Yar yelling at Q, and I was so focused on the four in front of Q that like I completely didn't pay attention to those.
I'll just have to rewatch it, I suppose.
Oh no, how terrible.
Well, the first season's not amazing, but it has its moments. It does
right,
have its moments.
Of course.
And then it has Code of Honor, but we won't talk about that. Anyway, so yeah, I like how it bookends. I like the way that it comes full circle, this idea that the trial never ended, that the Q are always watching because we are a volatile species, you know, and you never really know what we're going to do. And we've surprised the Q many times, and we're continuing to do so. And the journey doesn't end either. Right. This idea that the trial never ends, but the journey never ends. Right. It's not a 5-year mission. It's an ongoing mission.
Right.
And so this isn't the end of it. And that leads to the final scene in the episode, which is the poker scene. Throughout the series, they play poker a lot. Some of my favorite bits are during poker play, like in Cause and Effect. And they all show up, and then Picard shows up. And he's never played poker with them before. They're all very surprised to see him and everything. And it's a really touching moment that really also informs the movies, because you get to know that this isn't the end for them. Like, from an acting perspective, the show was over. Mm-hmm. Production shut down. And yes, they did the movies, but the crew in fictional universe continued on. This was not the last mission of the Enterprise, right? Whereas Deep Space Nine and Voyager are very finite.
Yeah.
With their endings. TNG is not. TNG is very much open-ended. The Enterprise D continues on that day, and they have more missions, right? And a lot happens in between the movies. And the idea that Picard is recognizing what he's just been through so he can change those relationships, I think it's a big deal. It's pretty cool. It's a very emotional scene, I think.
It was lovely. Deanna just saying to him, "You are always welcome," was a wonderful last line. Well, it wasn't the last line, because he says 5-card stud, sky's the limit. You know?
The sky's the limit.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's pretty great.
It is.
I love it. I think it looks really good. I mean, the action sequences are great. They made these new ships like the Pasteur and the new Klingon ships, mm-hmm. and they updated the Enterprise. And
it touched on all the right things. It had wonderful callbacks to other episodes throughout the entire run. It had lovely character development just within that whole thing. Characters changed and grew. It was emotional. It was action packed. It was intelligent, and I can't think of a better way to end that show. It's just, it works so well.
Yeah, I could probably talk about it as long as the episode is, or even longer. But we're kind of at our hour mark, so.
I will say, like I told you, I'm a little disappointed that Guinan and Wesley didn't get to show up, because they were huge. It just throughout the prepping for Picard, we had a ton of Wesley Guinan moments.
Yeah, it's a good point. And, you know, having Wesley show up, they might have been able to work that out in the past timeline.
Right.
It doesn't work so well in the other two timelines. Guinan gets complicated.
Because she senses time
issues.
She
senses those issues. And she doesn't like Q. Q's kind of afraid of her. And it could have been an equally good episode, but it would have been a very different episode.
Yeah.
And at the least, we get Guinan in Generations, which is very cool. But I mean, I don't think you could ever have enough of that character.
No, so. She deserve, like, if it was in nowadays, if TNG was coming out now, one of the things would have been a spinoff of Guinan's race, and
maybe,
you know, they would have had Malcolm McDowell and everything.
Yes,
it's very likely that they would have tossed that around. If Aquaman writers are tossing around a Trench spinoff, they would have talked about Guinan's race.
Maybe. All right, well, I think that's all we've got then for the finale.
I have some questions for you.
Okay.
So, do you feel like this list has refreshed you and prepped you for Picard?
It's hard to say for me because there was very little I had forgotten.
Okay.
Gambit is one of the ones I had kind of forgotten a good amount of, but...
Are you going in to Picard wishing that there are other episodes you would have watched?
I mean, in a perfect world, I would have done a full rewatch of the series and the four films. But that's just hard to do and kind of impractical given the time frame that we had. Once it was delayed, I really thought we were going to have more time, which is why the prepping for Picard started off going episode by episode rather than the combining season chunks.
Yeah.
You know, our first four, five, six, like these are just individual episodes.
Yeah.
You know, and then with our episode 80, we started combining things.
Right.
You know, and so, you know, it just, I think I would have liked to have just seen it all, but there just wasn't time.
Right.
You know, when you talk about, you're talking almost 170 hours of content to get through between the episodes and the films. It's okay. Just, you know, it's a lot, but
what callbacks do you want to see in Picard?
I don't know that I want to see a ton. I think it's important that you ground who he has become. So if that's going to be the events of the destruction of Romulus that we get to get referenced in the 2009 film, you know, then we need to talk about that. Maybe knowing how Picard and Seven know each other. You know, why they know each other, because
there's... I imagine if Picard had ever read about Janeway's, like, her captain's log, he would at least know of Seven.
Sure. I'm sure they knew of each other, right? I mean, you know, Seven knew of Picard because of just her Borg memory for number one.
Right.
And Picard would probably know of her because of her experience being liberated from the Borg. But I'm curious, like, at what level do they know each other?
That's fair.
Right. Did they ever work together or serve together or whatever? And, you know, I don't know that I need a lot. Maybe just let me know what happened to some people. There is a comic book that's like a countdown Picard comic. And in there they do explain like where Geordi is. So for those who are interested, Geordi is now actually running Utopia Planitia, which is where new starships are designed and constructed, which is pretty cool. I think that's a pretty good job for him.
Do you think that in the future timeline they made Geordi a novelist because of reading Rainbow?
That's cute. I never thought about it, but that's adorable. maybe. I think they did it mainly because the Geordi character always has such a hard time with relationships and romantic situations that they wanted to give him the happy ending of having a family.
That's nice.
You know, I think it's probably that more than anything.
Okay. What do you hope that they don't do in Picard?
I hope they don't. I don't want too many references to old stuff.
I would rather there be life event references rather than characters brought back. Like, as much as I love that cast and, you know, we've met quite a few and they were so amazing, but this is Picard's show. I would rather them focus on a lot of the things he's been through and a lot of the things he's done than like those kind of callbacks as opposed to just random guest spot by.
Yeah. I just don't want too many Easter eggs. There's like so many, like, you know, The Mandalorian, as good as it was, there were a couple of times where the little nods might have been a little too much.
You think so?
But that's for another day. But I don't want to see that. And I don't believe this is going to happen because of Patrick Stewart. and his involvement directly, but I don't want them to too drastically change the foundation of who he is, because 25 years is a very long time, and I expect him to be a different person.
Right.
But at the end of the day, I expect his foundation, right, his moral compass to be the same.
That's fair. I would like that.
Yeah.
And any new things you want to see?
Yeah. I mean, I want to see what technology is like. One of my favorite things in Star Trek is seeing how the technology evolved, or in Enterprise's case, de-evolved, to show the bridges, how we got to where we are, kind of thing. And that 25 years, I mean, what does starships look like, right? You know, we had the Enterprise E. What does the Enterprise look like 25 years later? You know, what kind of aliens do we know now? Yeah. Right? Is the Federation larger? Are there new aliens? Are we going to maybe bring back some that we've kind of forgotten about? You know, Bullions have always kind of taken a back seat, for example. You know, will we see
Andorians, or, you know,
who knows?
Right.
Right. So that's, I'm very curious about those types of things. You know, it seems like this really focuses on Romulans and Borg. So one of my major concerns is the Borg. They kind of had their teeth taken away from them after a little bit, right? I mean, in TNG, they were a pretty big freaking deal. And in First Contact, it was like a horror movie at times. But Voyager quickly kind of ran them into the ground from a scary perspective.
Yeah.
Right. And Enterprise did an interesting job bringing them back in the episode Regeneration. But overall, the Borg kind of lost their punch by the time Voyager was done.
That's fair.
And so when they come back here, what will that be like? You know, I'm curious.
Do you think the 2009 movie has affected the way the Romulans look? Because they don't look the same as they did in TNG.
I mean, it's tough. Romulans look different most of the time.
Yeah.
That you see them. You know, like in the original series, they didn't really have any forehead. Not really ridges, right. But you know what I'm trying to say. And then in TNG they do, but they vary. Their skin tone varies pretty considerably. You know,
there just could be different evolved Romulans. Okay.
I mean, they just kind of look fine. Different. I mean, it's kind of the same with the Klingons. The Klingons have just changed their look so much over the years. And, you know, in Discovery, when the Klingons are bald, they look pretty substantially different. But once they have hair, they actually look pretty damn close to what a Klingon
TNG
looks like.
Yeah.
You know, and just like humans, it doesn't make sense for every Vulcan, every Romulan, every Klingon to look the same, because we don't all look the same. We all look pretty freaking different, too.
It's true.
And
where we hail from has quite a bit of effect on how we evolved and what we look like. So that makes sense that not all Romulans are the same. That was a huge critique that I had. You know, the female Cardassian was just Cardassian with makeup on. It looked very odd, because there are obvious differences between male and female in most Earth species. And
yeah, you don't get to see too many Cardassian women. She's the only Gull that you ever see. And then you get to see a few civilians, but not many.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
But yeah, any other questions?
I just want to go back and watch some more TNG.
Well, that's fine with me.
Show me some Hugh stuff now.
Yeah, we have to watch
start
Iborg.
An essential Riker list for me.
We need to watch Iborg, because that was not on my list. And that, knowing now that Hugh is in this, he probably, that episode would have been on my list. But as well as maybe Descent.
Would you have put some more Voyager episodes on this for, you know, just prepping for Picard show and not like Picard character?
I mean, that's a good point too. I mean, that's where things start to get kind of hard to pare down, because with Hugh's involvement, you need Iborg and Descent, which is a two-part episode. And then with Seven of Nine's return, you know, you'd have to pare down her episodes as well. And there's probably half a dozen that I'd have to pick.
That's fair.
You know, so now you're at 28 episodes, some of which are two-parters, you know, for my list. And so maybe it's a 30-episode list where a good number of them are two-part episodes. It starts to get more and more unwieldy to prepare for the show. But, I mean, I didn't know that either of them were going to be involved. So I really focused just on Picard himself.
Well, I want to say that I think you had a really good list. And after watching each episode, I understood why you put it on there. So I feel prepped for Picard.
Well, I'm glad. Thank you. And you know, just like all good things must come to an end, so must prepping for Picard. So I think this is a good note to end on. Ray, how can people reach out to you?
I'm at Siren Ray on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
And I'm, of course, the Star Trek dude on Twitter and Facebook. You can find my co-host Greg at @_Bittersteel on Twitter. You can find us at Red Shirts Pod on Twitter or at Heroes Podcasts on Facebook, heroespodcasts.com. And you can subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Podcast Addict, Spreaker, Google Play, all that good stuff. We look forward to coming back next week. We will talk about Short Treks, and then we will be moving on to the Picard show. Woo. So that is what we'll be doing after that. So we hope that you continue to stay tuned with us, and the sky's the limit.